Hey everybody, this is Carrie Lee.
I'm Daniel.
And this is the Actor Hack Podcast.
And we're coming to you from Brooklyn, New York.
And we have Chelsea with us today.
Hi, Chelsea.
Thank you for coming.
Hi, thank you for having me. So I'm from Louisiana, like both of you guys, and I went to LSU, like both of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Chicago after school.
What made you move to Chicago?
I had this idea that I think was propagated strongly by the LSU Theater Department, that there was a lot of work in Chicago. And that if you wanted to be famous, you could go to New York or LA, and if you wanted to just work, then you could go to Chicago. Which turned out, I think, to be pretty much true. So I'm really glad that I went to Chicago first. I was there for almost 6 years, where I met my husband, and I worked a lot there, and made some really great friends and professional relationships there as well. But when I first got there, I just wanted to, like, meet whoever I could meet, so I did a crewed on some shows.
Mm-hmm.
I assistant stage managed shows, I assistant directed. I just did whatever I could do to kind of get a foot in the door, and then I started working as a playwright. I wanted to write and direct, and was kind of figuring out what I was better at, and then there were just more opportunities just happened for writing, and so I started doing some 10-minute things, and then longer things, and submitting, and because I had developed relationships with companies on a really sort of ground level, then they knew who I was, and I wasn't just like a name on a script.
Mm-hmm.
When they would get it, they were like, oh yeah, that's the girl that cleaned up all the fake blood after it. It happened in a really organic way, and the Chicago theater community is just really, no one's making any money, so it's just really, there's a lot of camaraderie and a lot of sort of like, oh, what else can you do?
Right.
Not to shit where I eat, but I feel like they're much more inclined to do new work than in New York.
Definitely.
Yeah. Just because there's this spirit of sort of like, what's innovative? What's different? What's off the wall? It costs a lot less to produce theater in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
so companies can take risks on a financial level that they can't take here.
Right.
They're also just a lot more young companies. There's like always over 200. Like, no matter
right.
how many companies close, there are over 200 small non-equity theater companies in Chicago at any given time, and they all are looking for scripts. So,
mm-hmm. And so you didn't only get your undergrad at LSU, you got another degree, right?
I did. I got a master's of education because my parents were really concerned about my ability to take care of myself. English creative writing and theater performance for my two undergraduate degrees. And I wanted to go to Chicago immediately, and my parents were like, please, please go to grad school and so you could teach, and it'll never be easier because you don't have a family. You don't have a mortgage, you don't
mm-hmm.
have a job, like, just stay in school. And so I went immediately from undergrad to graduate school. I finished in May, and then graduate school started in June. This program at LSU is called the Holmes Program. It's an accelerated program where you get a master's of education in whatever your undergraduate degree is in.
Uh-huh.
So if you already have an undergraduate degree in English, then you get a master's of English education, and you student teach at the same time as you're in class. You student teach all day, and then you go to class at night.
Okay.
So it's really exhausting.
Yeah.
But you get a master's degree in 18 months. It's really quick. But by that point, like, I didn't even go to my graduation, my master's. Like, I didn't stay in town long enough. Like, as soon as I was done with classes, I was gone. And I never thought I would go back to school. And then I did.
Uh-huh.
But my parents were absolutely right, as they have been in many things, because when I left Chicago and I moved to Virginia with my husband, because he got a job at a regional theater in Virginia, I was able to teach on a college level, even though I don't have an MFA in creative writing, because I have a master's of English education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I taught playwriting, and I taught dramatic literature and English 101, and I was able to be an adjunct faculty member at two different small liberal arts colleges because of my master's degree in
mm-hmm.
education. In Chicago, there's so much work to be done. Like, by the time I had been there for 6 years, I was always doing three shows. I was
mm-hmm.
always, like, in one festival and, like, self-producing something else and, like, working on something else. It's easy to get so buried in that scene that you never, like, lift your head and consider what else might be happening.
Right.
And so after I left Chicago, it was suddenly like, oh, well, anywhere I work is going to be a plane ticket. I was still working in Chicago. And then I started submitting scripts in New York and LA and Toronto and Minneapolis, and
mm-hmm.
just sort of kind of with connections, but also a lot of times just cold sending scripts.
How would you find that?
I pay dues to be a member of the Playwright Center in Minneapolis and the Dramatists Guild in New York, and they both have resource directories that if you that you have access to as a member. And then also there are some blogs. Aaron Squire, who is a Juilliard classmate of mine, has a blog called Six Perfections where he lists every month a roundup of submission opportunities.
Okay.
So I just kind of figured out where those were, and then I spent a lot of time just submitting plays, which is like a real low-tech, kind of not glamorous part of the job that takes up a great deal of time. It would be more about, do I have something that fits the criteria they're looking for?
Okay.
Do I have something that's set in the South? Do I have something that is five characters or less in under 90 minutes? Or the tricky thing is that a lot of these places want only new and unproduced scripts, which I didn't know at the time because I didn't have an agent, I didn't really have a grasp on the industry, is actually kind of a really shitty thing to ask for, because once something's had a world premiere, it's sort of in the climate that we're in right now, because so many theaters get grants for doing the first production of a play. Once something has had a world premiere, it becomes kind of dead in the water.
Yeah.
In terms of what other if other companies will touch it. And so if you give your world premiere rights away to a tiny theater in Des Moines that does a production of it, and then later someone else that would actually pay you to do it and would actually like get reviewed wants to do it, they probably will pass on it if it's already had a world premiere, especially if it's gotten even one review in a local paper.
Does that include readings or like workshops
and
stuff?
No, not readings, not workshops. And in some cases, if it's been a non-equity production, it's still okay.
Okay.
But I had this play that I wrote when I was living in Virginia that had, like, I thought, a really great production in Chicago. It was a non-equity theater company that I really liked. I thought they did a fantastic job. It got some good reviews. It was my sample that was sort of, like, sent out to agents when I first got into Juilliard. And I would go and I would meet with agents and they would be like, well, I can't send this to any theaters because it's already had a production and got reviewed.
Right.
Or I would meet with literary managers and they'd be like, I love this play. I could never program it because it's already been reviewed. So I didn't know when I was, like, sitting at my computer in Virginia and sending out scripts everywhere that I should, that there's a tactic. There's, like,
yeah, you need to be a little bit more selective.
Exactly. And pay closer attention to what they're asking for and what they plan to do with it. I also didn't know that it's not legal for theaters to say, we're going to take this and then we'll own the rights to the video. That's not actually something they own. But a lot of those submission opportunities would say things like that, and I'd just be like, here it is. I should have done a little bit more research into, like, what my rights were before I started doing all that, because now there are just, like, thousands of scripts floating around.
But that's so frustrating, because at a certain point, you just want as much of your work to be produced as possible.
Exactly.
Right, and if you have a great script that's producible, like, are you supposed to hold on to that until you get the right offer?
Yeah, I mean, it becomes a real stupid game.
So was, when you moved to Virginia, was that always a temporary situation, or?
No, we didn't know. So we moved there because we had just gotten married. We moved there 2 weeks after we got married. My husband got this job offer at this theater that he had worked at as an intern before he moved to Chicago, and he's a sound designer, a theatrical sound designer, and so he knew the theater and a lot of the same people were still there, and he had been freelance in Chicago for over 9 years, and he wanted stability. And I was really reevaluating what I wanted to do, because in Chicago I was working a lot, but I always had to have a day job. And I was kind of like, is this really going to be my life forever, where I'm giving the dregs of my energy to this thing that I thought was going to be my career, and writing at night and on the weekend when I'm really tired? So the cost of living in Virginia was much lower, and he was going to have this really well-paying, stable job, and insurance, and a 401k, and all this, like, unicorn stuff that we dreamed of.
Yeah.
And so we talked about it, and he got the job offer, and we moved, and it was kind of a, like, let's see. We said we were going to give it 3 years when we moved there, and see what happened in that time. And during that time, like, I got these teaching jobs, we bought a house, we got a dog. It was real cozy, and I got a lot of writing done, because I was teaching part-time and, like, building websites a little bit, and didn't have to have a 9-to-5 job, and we were able to save a lot of money. And so it was like, a really, really ideal situation. And also, I don't know that I ever would have started submitting scripts outside Chicago if mm-hmm. I were still in Chicago. So it turned out to be, like, the very best thing for both of us. Then, when we had been there for about 3 years, I applied to Juilliard, to the graduate writing program at Juilliard, and upended our entire life.
Now, how did you make friends? Like, I know that sounds so, like, basic.
I'm a really aggressive friend. I don't think anyone would argue with that. So, it was weird for me. It was a really weird transition for me when we moved there, because Miles was working at this theater. And the Barter Theater, which is where he was working, is this fantastic equity theater in Virginia that runs in rep. They do something like 22 shows a year. So, everyone's always in two shows and rehearsing two shows. Mm-hmm. So, their lives are, like, they work the maximum number of hours equity allows a week. And so everyone I knew was busy at the same time my husband was busy, or everyone I had met, they all had the same schedule. And so I was just, like, kicking around the house by myself. And I was used to having co-workers, and I was used yeah. to going to rehearsal. And there was a lot of, like, sitting on the couch and being like, what have I done? Just started being, like, really aggressive about meeting people that worked at the theater and trying to carve out time with them. We threw a lot of parties at our house, a lot of, like, somebody got engaged, somebody did this, it's Tuesday, you know, whatever. Yeah. If there was someone looking for a location for a party, I was like, we'll do it. Because that community there is really a community of expats from other places. Everybody knows what it's like to be, like, the first person in town. And then I started to make friends with some people outside the theater who weren't all on the same schedule, and... So it was just a matter of, like, not giving people a choice, really, about whether or not to be my friend.
What made you apply to Juilliard?
I had this sort of, like, come to Jesus moment with myself when we had been in Virginia for about 3 years and we had bought this house and, like, I was teaching, which I really like, but I was working less and less as a playwright because I have figured out, like, as much as it's a kind of a solitary business and email is a big part of it, like, you have to put in FaceTime or people forget who you are. Mm-hmm. And so I had been going to Chicago somewhat regularly and seeing shows and putting my face in front of artistic directors' faces and being like, I still write, I'm still alive. But I wasn't, like, first on people's list anymore to call to submit for festivals and things mm-hmm. like that. And I was starting to feel a drop-off. And also, like, we're running this budget basically on 1.5 salaries. And so if something happened, like, we had to replace the oven, then there's not, like, money for a plane ticket for me to go to L.A. to see a reading of something. Because I wasn't generating any income as a playwright. Like, mm-hmm. that was the thing that had to fall by the wayside if there was, like, a money crunch. So I had this moment of, like, is this it? Is this it? Have I, like, done my time as a playwright that enables me to now teach well and know kind of, like, what the industry is like and that, and I'm just going to teach and we're going to have this life and it's going to be good. It didn't feel like a settling for plan B. It was just sort of like, maybe this is my life and maybe it's time to have a kid and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, this is how it's going to go. And then on one of these, like, many, many submission things that I was still filling out, I saw the call for submissions for the graduate writing program at Juilliard. And when I was a kid, I was an actor. I thought Juilliard was, like, the space program. You know, it was, like, the most amazing thing that only the very best people applied to. And, like, if you got in, it was the most miraculous thing ever. And the first time we came to New York when I was 16 with my family, like, everyone was saying they want to go see this. They want to go to the Statue of Liberty. They want to do this. And I was like, I just want to go to Juilliard. And so we did. And so I have this amazing picture of myself standing in front of Juilliard at 16 years old in these, like, nylon pants that zipped off into shorts.
Yes.
And so it was just, that was, like, my dream school when I was an actor. And then, but I didn't even apply, like, at the end of high school, because at the time, Juilliard didn't give merit-based scholarships, only need-based scholarships, which I didn't qualify for. And I would have had to move to New York and, like, pay to live in New York. My parents had two younger kids still in private school. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't even audition, and I wouldn't have gotten in, quite frankly. Now I know the caliber of actors that go to Juilliard. So I saw the submission, and I had toyed with the idea of going to grad school for an MFA, and I had actually called Michael Tick, who was the director of the theater program at LSU when we were there, who now teaches at the University of Kentucky. And he was basically like, if you pay someone to give you an MFA in playwriting, you need to go to a program one of the top five programs in the country, mm-hmm. where the instructors can introduce you to the industry, because otherwise you're wasting your time and your money. There are a lot of people with playwriting MFAs right now who aren't working. And so I was sort of, like had that in the back of my head. Then when I saw that the people who teach at Juilliard were Marsha Norman and Christopher Durang, I was like, okay. And then you're already in New York. But I was like, there's no way, you know, like mm-hmm. we live in Virginia, how are we going to afford it? And then I found out the program is actually free. There's no tuition. It's a fellowship. So, and then I was like, well, it's only, the deadline's only 2 weeks away. With everybody's crazy schedules here, I'll never, like, I had a play I wanted to submit, but I needed to hear it again and do another draft. And I was like, no, I won't have time to get everybody together. And then miraculously, like, everybody had time in their schedule to get mm-hmm. together to read this play. And so all these objections that I had to applying kind of fell away. And then I asked Miles about it, and he was like, yeah, you should totally apply. Like, do it. And so it was kind of... Now I'm maybe making it sound like more of a ultimatum than it was in my mind at the time, but I was sort of like, let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
And then if I don't get in, then I'll know. This will be a sign from the universe that I'm supposed to, like, live in Virginia and teach, and this is the life that was, like, built for me. But yeah. Let me just give it one shot. Not knowing that, like, people apply 5 and 6 times to get into Juilliard, I was just sort of like, if I don't get in, then it's not meant to be. And then I applied, and then I just, like, waited for 8 months to hear back.
So how long of a script is the requirement?
It's 2 letters of recommendation, an artistic statement, and 1 play, which is really, was kind of difficult for me because everything that I've written is very different from each other. And so I was kind of like, what's going to be the thing? What's the most, not even maybe the most polished thing, but the most interesting thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked some friends of mine who were literary managers who read, like, hundreds of scripts, and... One of my friends suggested that I had this play that is set in Appalachia. It's actually it's running right now in Chicago. It's an older play. And she was like, no one writes plays about Appalachia. You should submit that. And I was living in Appalachia, and I was like, well, I know all about it, so. So I submitted that play, but in a weird turn of events, it didn't end up being the play that got me into Juilliard.
And so was there any sort of interview process?
Yeah,
or?
So once you make the semifinalist round, there's an interview. You submit in December, and then it says on the website, like, don't expect to hear anything from us until June. And so, but I was back timing in my mind. I was like, okay, so if they announce in June, that means they probably announce the finalists in May, which means they probably call the finalists for interviews in April. So I didn't really worry about it until April. And then as April was kind of drawing to a close, I was like, well, okay. So I didn't get an interview, so I can let that go. And so I put some things in my life on hold. Like, I had offers from the school to teach more classes the next semester, and mm-hmm. I had not given them an answer. And I was like, it costs a lot of money to live in New York. And so we're trying to, like, save money and make plans about whether or not we have this money. And at the end of April of this would have been, I guess, 2014. I was at home by myself with the dog in Virginia playing video games, and I checked my email on my phone, and I had an email from Marsha Norman. It said nothing about Juilliard. I had submitted for the Yale Prize, which is a $10,000 award, and I had submitted this play that had a production in Chicago, the play that I had a production in Chicago that I thought went really well that now no one will produce. and I... had submitted that for the Yale Prize, and she was a judge. And so I got this email that was like, this play is amazing. I think your voice is really exciting. It doesn't have an ending. I think you know that. And I was like, oh, shit. and it was like, it needs to be 40 pages longer. It needs to have a clear ending. And I think you should write that draft, and then I think you should apply to Juilliard with it. And I remember I stood up and I, like, went to my computer to reread it to see if it, like, made more sense
on the big screen.
Because it was like getting an email from Angelina Jolie or something. Yeah. I was like, all right. What? and so then I called a friend of mine who had written one of my letters of recommendation, and I was like, what do I do? And she was like, write back an email that's the exact same link as the email she sent you. And I was like, okay. So I sat down.
That's awesome. I love that.
So I sat down and I was like, so nice to hear from you. And I hear what you're saying about the play, and I'm definitely going to do another draft of it. And I actually already have applied to Juilliard. You know, they get 500 scripts a year. Chris and Marsha don't read all of those scripts. There's there's a group of readers that pass things up the line. And so she hadn't. She doesn't know in April, like, who's made it. And so I didn't get an email back from her. And I was like, oh, okay. what do I do? So I was telling my friend, a friend of mine at the theater about it, and she was like, why are we talking right now? Why are you not rewriting that script? why don't you, like, show her what kind of student you would be? And mm-hmm. I was like, brilliant. So I, like, did a rewrite of the script, and then I sent it to her, and I still didn't hear anything. And then, like, a week went by, and then I got a call from Juilliard saying, would you come for an interview? And would you send us this other script?
Awesome.
So I don't know how I would... I don't know if I would have gotten into Juilliard if I had not submitted that other play for the Yale Prize. Because mm-hmm. I don't know that, based on the strength of the play I did submit, I would have made it. A famous playwright is the judge every year, and so...
That's so cool!
Yeah, so it's just a really weird turn of events.
Yeah, that's a sign from the universe.
Yeah, definitely. And then they were like, you can come to New York, or we can do your interview over Skype. And I was like, I'm coming to New York. And then you get invited to, if you're a semifinalist or finalist, you get invited to Playwrights Evening, which is at the end of your first year, there's a 15-minute excerpt performed from one of the plays you've written in your first year at Signature Theater, and it's supposed to be this, like, industry showcase for the mm-hmm. first-year writers, and they were like, you're totally invited, this has no bearing on admission, and I was like, everything has bearing. So I bought another plane ticket, like, came back and went to Playwrights Evening, and that's when I met Chris, and I met Marcia in person. And
it sounds super, I mean, even though people say that, like, it has no bearing, I feel like you're so right. Why leave anything to, like, chance? Just show up for everything.
Yeah, and meeting somebody face-to-face always changes their opinion of you.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And how long is that program?
It's 2 years. I graduated in less than a month.
So then, is it part of the program, then, to hook you up with an agent or a manager?
It's a big selling point of the program is the professional development component. So because it's not an MFA, there are actually several people in my class who already have MFAs from elsewhere. You don't get a terminal degree, so part of the draw of the program is that you get positioned in the industry in such a way. So, like, they really, really help with getting agents. We get introduced to a lot of directors and literary managers and, like, movers and shakers in New York. It's good to already be in New York. I have friends who've gotten MFAs from well-respected programs elsewhere, but then moved to New York, and it's like they feel like they're starting over again.
Yeah, they don't know anybody.
So it's good to already be here. And then you meet amazing actors as well. Because the theater program is really just playwrights and actors. So no tech students, no directing program.
Yeah. And are they performing your work?
They are. They perform our work, and when we have readings at school, they do a full production at the beginning of our second year of something we wrote in the first year. They do productions of alumni works sometimes in their regular season. We work closely with them. And then they're also kind of, like, really game anytime. It's like, I'm about to bring this into class. Would you guys meet? I'll feed you pizza. And they become a really great resource in terms of... just being able to hear things.
Yeah. And that's incredible because they have such a grueling schedule.
For them to be open.
Is the playwriting, do you feel like that it's, like, similar? Like,
no, it's not at all. It's really choose your own adventure.
Do you have sort of, like, a game plan after graduation?
My game plan is that I will have written 6 full-length plays in 2 years. I have amazing agents, and I can turn those plays over to them and be like, let's see what comes of this. I mean, the 3 I wrote last year are already sort of, like, in play. I have some readings coming up. I've been studying musical writing, and possibly, I haven't got my contract yet, possibly assisting on a musical, on a new musical that's going to be done at the Old Globe this summer.
Cool.
And then also have been going on lots and lots of TV meetings. And so I've taken one TV writing class. I'm about to take another TV writing class outside of Juilliard. So just kind of, like, exploring all of the options.
Does the program at Juilliard, like, deal with that at all, or is it strictly playwriting?
It's strictly playwriting, although of the 80 or so alumni of the program, like, so many of them work in TV.
Right.
It's not, like, a secret. It's not, like, taboo to talk about. It's just, like, you're only here for 2 years. It's free.
Yeah.
We're educating the next generation of American playwrights. Like, this is what this is what this program is set up to do. But there's so much overlap now. Like, I had a TV agent before I had written a word of any sort of, like, spec pilot or anything. When I got the call from school that was like, this TV agent wants to meet with you, I was like, I don't have anything to show her. And they were like, she's read your plays. And she has sent my plays around. I'm working on a pilot, but it's, like, not ready for prime time. And so she has sent my plays around, and, like, every TV meeting I've gotten has been based off a play. Yeah, it's not a one-way street anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, TV networks and producers are hiring playwrights, and they know how to read plays. And so it's, like, kind of implied that you know how to write for TV if you can write a play, which is
I guess turned out to be true. They're looking at your dialogue, I guess.
I mean, character. Like, mm-hmm. TV is about character. And because it never wraps up, can run forever.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
It's less about, like, who wants a thing and what's mm-hmm. in the way and do they get it, and more about, like, how deep can this character go?
Right.
How many layers can we peel back for 100 episodes and mm-hmm. still be astonished and still, like, fall in love or be horrified or whatever? Because you're writing collaboratively around a room, and you can break story, you can figure out plot points with that many heads in the room, and also it's kind of formulaic. It's sort of like, there's a decision. This woman's engaged. She's either going to marry the guy or she's not going to marry the guy. Or, you know, like, this person is either going to adopt this kid or not adopt this kid. Or they're going to, you know, like, shoot this guy or not shoot this guy. So the story kind of breaks down in ways that are not necessarily predictable, but, like, that's more like a math problem. But the character thing is the thing that they're hiring for.
So do you think you're going to stay in New York for the time being?
I would like to. I really like it here. My friends are here. My husband likes it here. He's working a lot. He just got a Drama Desk Award nomination.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
My agent texted me and she was like, congrats. And I was like, we don't run in circles. They get nominated for fancy awards. I mean, what is going on? But it's changing. But even shows that shoot here, the writers' rooms are in LA for the most part. There are more jobs, TV jobs here than there were even 5 years ago. But those are really hotly contested and hard to get straight out of school.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is that I probably will have to go to LA if I get a TV job, but those are contracted for a number of weeks. So it's like a 20-week contract or a 30-week contract. And then there's no guarantee you get renewed or get renewed on that show. And so I don't think we're going to uproot our lives, even if I get one contract. Mm-hmm. Just probably go out there and see how it goes and then maybe think about a move after that. So I'm the administrative director of the Lily Awards Foundation, which is a foundation that was formed, a nonprofit that was formed by Marsha Norman, Julia Jordan, and Teresa Rebeck to figure out what are the obstacles to gender parity in American theater and how do we start removing them. The first component was the awards, which are coming up in 3 weeks, where, like, women who have made extraordinary contributions to advancing gender parity in the American mm-hmm. theater are honored,
mm-hmm.
Which is sort of a reaction to the fact that when this will be the seventh awards, that even 7 years ago, you know, the Tony nominations, the Obie nominations, Drama Desk nominations would come out and it would just be like white dudes. Now it's grown to be sort of like, well, what else is standing in the way? Childcare is a huge thing. How do we get around the fact that women who have children have to take this, like, large chunk out of their careers? How do we get around the fact that, like, even though women are writing scripts, only 22% of the scripts produced regionally every year by women? Well, let's expose that fact, first mm-hmm. of all. You know, like, let's have a statistical analysis of, like, productions and show the raw numbers. And so the Lily Awards now has, like, several initiatives. And so that's what I do during the day. Which is great, because I feel like I'm working for myself, being a female playwright. You know, like, every Absolutely. Hour that I spend working, I'm working for my own cause. And then I get to meet a lot of really amazing people as well. The hack that has, like, changed my life this year is TSA PreCheck.
That's incredible.
Because I fly a lot, and the fact that I can skip the security line mm-hmm. is, like, it's $85 for 5 years.
Okay.
I've broken that down to be, like, less than $6 a time I pass through security. You'd never have to worry that, like, you get to the airport and there's a school field trip going to Disney World and there are 200 kids ahead of you in line. Mm-hmm. Don't have to take their shoes off. And you can just go to the airport and, like, breeze through security. You don't have to take your shoes off, take your laptop out, any of that stuff. It's just, like, reduced my flight anxiety by a factor of 1,000.
Did you have to go for, like, a meeting for that?
You go to a place near Penn Station, you make an appointment, you go, they take your fingerprints, they take your money, they take the application, which you can print out and fill out before you go. And it takes like 10 minutes.
Because I was intimidated by the meeting.
Are they doing a background check on you?
Yeah, they're running a background check. Okay. That's what I asked my husband for Christmas. I was like, can we get TSA pre-check for Christmas? Because both of us have to get it, otherwise it does... Like, if one of us is stuck in the back of school.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so we both got it, and it's like life-changing.
This meditation app, it's called Headspace, and you can... I mean, you have to pay for it eventually, but like... there's all these sort of free offers you can kind of get in on it. But it's like every day my boss and I will take turns doing it. It's like, okay, I'm going to shut the door now and I'll check back in 10 minutes. And it's just, it sort of resets the afternoon.
The advice that your friend gave you, like, why don't you edit this play and send it back to them and prove what kind of student you're going to be? Like, a lot of times we separate the audition application process from, like, what we're trying to achieve. And so if you think about them in the same way, like, well, what kind of actor am I going to be on set or in the rehearsal room? And that's the kind of person that I need to be in the audition room or when I'm submitting an application.
And everyone, if you could go to the website, www.classactorhack.com, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
You can email us at podcast@classactorhack.com. You can also go to the web, if there's anything that you heard, they're like, oh God, that's great, and Daniel was mumbling, I don't know what that is. You can go to the blog, and we will list all the resources that we've listed in every episode.
Find us on iTunes and Stitcher, and thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. If anything, my mother will listen to it.